Speakers, all lines are now open. Please go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Patient Safety Complications Workgroup A conference call. This is Andrew Leisinga. I'm the project manager for this project. We've also got a few other people from NQF on the line with us, Heidi Bosley, Jessica Weber, and Akeem Demaheen. I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to call in for this. We know you're all extremely busy, and we gave you pretty short notice on this, so we really appreciate that you could make it on. The call today is scheduled for 2 hours, but we've only got 4 measures to review, so I don't expect this will take up that full amount of time, and hopefully we can let you off a little early. We got some good comments through the online evaluations, and I think we've got a good discussion ahead of us. So to just give you an idea of what we'd like to accomplish through this call, what we'd like to do is to just do some preliminary evaluation of the measures in front of us in a smaller group in advance of the in-person meeting. We're hoping this will help you think through the measures a little bit and hash out any questions you have so that you've got a little bit more of a comfort level with both the measures and the evaluation process itself. We think that'll help us work through the measure reviews at the in-person meeting a little more efficiently. For the work group members, we've assigned each of you as a primary reviewer for one of the measures. And what we can do, if you don't mind, is to have the primary reviewer give a quick overview of the measure, maybe just the basic gist of it and any issues or questions that occurred to you as you read it over. We can take a look at your preliminary online evaluations. If you're on the webinar, we'll display them on the screen. I understand that there's been a bit of a problem with the webinar, but we'll try to get that sorted out. And if we do get them up, we can use those as sort of a jumping-off point for discussion. Otherwise, we can just have the primary reviewers sort of give their thoughts and then have everybody chime in as needed. It might be useful as we do that to work through each of the evaluation criteria one by one, and at the end of each of those, we can maybe get a sort of informal sense from all of you whether you think the criterion in question has been met and why or why not. But before we get into that, though, maybe we could just go around and have each of the work group members introduce themselves. Start with Christina.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chris Mihalik, and I'm a medication safety specialist and pharmacist by background at the Institute for Safe Medication Practices.
Thanks. Anything else, Gina?
Yes, Gina Puglisi. I am a nurse by training. I am vice president of the Safety Institute at the Premier Healthcare Alliance and associate faculty at Rush University College of Nursing and University of Illinois School of Public Health.
Great. Thanks. Patricia, you want to go ahead?
Sure. Thank you. I'm Pat Quigley, and I'm a nurse practitioner and clinical nurse specialist, associate director of patient safety programs at the Tampa VA in Florida. And I'm also associate chief for nursing research, and my work is fall prevention and reducing fall-related injuries in frail elderly and people with disability. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. And Tracy,
Hi, I'm Tracy Wang. I'm clinical research manager for WellPoint in the public health policy area. I'm also serving as the enterprise patient safety lead to build partnerships and strategies that accelerate improvements in both quality and safety. I'm intimately involved in a couple of safety projects in different states, and so I'm very looking forward to working with you all.
All right. Thank you very much. So let's maybe just we can take these measures in order. We can start with measure 0021, therapeutic monitoring, annual monitoring for patients on persistent medications. And I think we have Gina Puglisi as the primary reviewer for that. Do you want to just give a quick overview of the measure and your thoughts on it?
Yes. And is the measure developer on the call as well?
Yes, we should have the measure developers on the line. I'm not sure if they're on our open line, but if you have any questions, just let us know and we can ask the operator to open their lines up.
Okay. So I can give a quick overview, but the questions that I have are in each of the sections that we were asked to evaluate. Do you want me to just save those all to the end?
If you can sort of summarize a little bit, we can, I think.
Andrew, maybe it makes sense to ever give an overall conversation of the measure, and then why don't we just get into importance, and I think Dawn
right.
is on.
Yeah, that sounds great.
That'll be
okay.
Faster, I don't, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay, well, just, it looks like everybody reviewed the measure and scored it, so I think everybody's familiar with what the measure is. It's the percent of members over age 18 who've received at least 180 days of a medication therapy in the ambulatory care setting for four agents and have one therapeutic monitoring event for each of the agents in the measurement year. And the measure describes those drugs as an ACE or an ARB, digoxin, a diuretic, or an anticonvulsant. And so the measure is the sum of the four numerators divided by the sum of the four denominators. So that's the measure. I did have a question on the measure, and, you know, in various sections of the discussion and the supporting materials, there was information on monitoring for statins and monitoring for tricyclic antidepressants, and just wondered if that was something that was supposed to be included in the measure. And I believe that it was a little bit different than what was on the N2F website in terms of what the measure specified. So just wondered about that. So that was... That was one of the questions I had about the measure.
Well, maybe I think we have Dawn Lyon on the line. Dawn, are you on the open line? Sounds like she's not. Operator, could we open Dawn Lyon's line?
Actually, I don't see Dawn on the line. Dawn, if you're sitting on the line with someone, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone.
You're on the webinar, but...
And Jeremy Gottlieb's line is open.
Yes. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Donna Lyon and Jeremy Gottlieb from NCQA. We are the measure developers.
Great, thanks for joining us. Did you hear the question that was just raised a moment ago?
Yeah, we did. It was about statins and tricyclic antidepressants.
Yeah,
yes.
We saw that those were listed in a sort of later on part of the measure, but they're not included in the numerator statement. So we're just wondering if those measures are or those medications are included in the measure.
I'm not too sure. I think we need to go back through the measure workups, and we can have that information for the meeting.
Okay.
Okay.
Gina, do you want to just repeat which ones you're concerned so they can have know specifically what they need to go back and look for? And
yeah, well, in the worksheet, the measure description includes ACE inhibitors, ARBs, digoxin diuretics, and anticonvulsants. But in some of the supporting materials, it talks about monitoring for statins and tricyclic antidepressants. I just wondered if that was intended to be in the measure or not. I think statins, if I can recall, was in the measure originally, and there was a suggestion to measure liver enzymes on the NQF website. So if this is a maintenance measure, just wondered what it was supposed to include, whether those are being dropped, and if so, why. That's my question. So that would have made it five drugs.
So the NCQA folks, if you're not sure about it right now, maybe you could take a look and come back with an answer for us at the in-person meeting on that.
So because the statins were not listed in the statement of the measure, I have to assume then that all the rest of the information applies to the only only to the four drugs that were listed in the measure, the description of the measure for the numerator and the denominator. Is that right that I proceed on that assumption?
I think that's fair for now.
Okay. So,
Gina and Andrew, this is Pat Quigley's voice.
Yes.
I apologize for interrupting, but I just wanted to mention that I see on the worksheet that was sent out to us, the Excel sheet, that my answers aren't in there.
Oh, are they not in there?
No, I don't see them for, and I was looking for the 0021, and, you know, when I first started working on our SurveyMonkey website, mm-hmm. I did contact Jessica because once I entered it in there and then continued to try and work, it wouldn't let me back in. So I don't know if my comments and my scoring of this one was not saved. I see them for the other three ones.
They're on there. I see them. Oh, the one. Yeah, you said impact insufficient as a brief description of the measure has too large a population.
Okay, maybe I just can't
see it. Older. Yeah, I'm having trouble with the Excel file. I don't know why it's freezing, but I can't see my scores on the Excel file.
Okay. Well, thank you. I was afraid that my comments weren't saved because I knew I had trouble with that monkey, and so Jessica did a change so I could keep adding.
You know what? If you put your cursor over the square where the comments are supposed to be, which would be the rationale column E, sometimes they come up in that bar across the top. That's the only way I could see them. I don't know why. I don't know what the setting in the Excel is that it keeps me from seeing certain squares.
Yeah, okay. I apologize for interrupting you.
No, that's all right.
We'll try to get that fixed for the next call.
And, are consistent with yours, Pat. They don't always appear in the same section. But in terms of the measure, a couple of comments. Most of the references in here refer to a Dan Budnitz article from 2006. But there's a really nice update of that similar research that was published in November 24th, 2011 in the New England Journal of Medicine. And, you know, just in terms of importance, I gave it a moderate in terms of impact because in this recent study that was done, it showed that although these drugs are included in the top 13 of those most implicated in emergency hospitalizations, the rates for these are extremely low compared to some of the other drugs that are being monitored. The top three is warfarin, insulin, and oral antiplatelet agents at 33%, 13%, 13% of those hospitalizations. But the ones that we're looking at in this particular measure are fairly low at 3% for DIG, 2.9% for ACE inhibitors, and then the bottom two are antidiuretics at about 1%. So just in terms of the big picture of importance, and I think that because these are drugs that do have complications and admissions associated with them, you know, they are important. I just wondered, compared to other monitoring of other things in when we look at the harmonization across other measures, whether these are ones we want to continue to look at just because they're kind of low and whether we want to focus more on the other therapies. That's why I give it a moderate for impact.
Well, Gina, this is Pat's voice again, and, you know, I had a question just in the beginning because I didn't know who members were. You know, the denominator had defined as members, and I didn't know what the definition of members was, Andrew. You know, if that was, like, insuring agencies or healthcare facilities, I didn't know what that population base was. Does anyone know what members means? It says members on persistent medications. Is that insured people?
Again, if we got the NCQA folks on the line, maybe they could give us an answer to that.
You know, in the website, the NQF website, they don't call them members; they call them patients. So.
Yeah, that's why I had no idea what members was.
There were some differences in the way they described the measure, and whether or not that was significant and what was going to appear in the final measure. I know there was a comment later on about but they edited it to be consistent with MQ measure. I keep looking for it. I wondered if maybe there was some editing done to it.
So I needed some clarification on that. But in addition, my biggest concern with this submission is that the age group was so large. I mean, this is a percent of members 18 years of age and older, but all the evidence essentially that's supported for this was very similar to that for 0-22 for the elderly. So, you know, I just thought so much of this was insufficient to be able to support what they were asking for because the evidence wasn't there, just like explaining the benefits of using this was not answered. So that was my biggest issue in marking insufficient, is I thought that the evidence that was here was really so similar to 0022. It didn't really support everyone 18 years and older. That's such a huge population.
Yeah, I mean, I had similar comments under this evidence of quantity, quality, and consistency of the evidence. I thought, you know, that the impact was still moderate, that these drugs do have an impact, maybe not specifically on this population, but kind of in general. And so I kind of gave my moderate score for impact based on that. But I agree, and I pointed out in a couple of the places, Pat, just what you mentioned, that, you know, have they ever really looked at the risks in this very young population? But, you know, and all the data that's published really supports these issues in the elderly, including this recent Budnitz article. So that's so those questions, I guess, have to be answered. Just the description of the denominator by the measure developer, member versus patient, and what exactly is it going to include in terms of the four drugs or five. And so under performance gap, I think that if we assume that we're going to be looking at the measure in this 18 to 65, I think that in looking at the data that's been supplied on the performance gap, there is a performance gap for these four drugs in the population they describe. I mean, this is an existing measure. It is being monitored, and there is data to show that there is a gap, and we haven't closed that gap yet. So I gave the performance gap a high because if you assume that it's these four measures and they've been monitoring for them, there still is a gap.
This is Heidi.
Should we maybe give
CQA a chance to answer some of the questions that they're able to now?
Sure.
So, Don or Jerry, are you able to answer the question about the denominator and then also the evidence piece?
Jeremy, your line is open.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
As far as the members go, these are members of health plans that report data, HEDIS data to NCQA. For this measure, that includes members in commercial, Medicaid, and Medicare health plans, and they have to fit the eligible population criteria identified in the measure.
So those are patients?
Yes, those are patients, but they have to be a member of the health plan.
Thank you. This is Pat Quigley. Thank you.
Yep.
Any comment on the Pat's comment about 18 to 65 being included in this, since all the data really supports the older population?
In our most recent reevaluation of the measure, where we did take the measure as it is, 18 and older, to our geriatric expert panel, we didn't have any comments from the group about the age group, but I can definitely go back and bring this up with some of our experts offline and see what they have to say.
And, sir, this is Pat Quigley's voice again. But, you know, my question is all the evidence that is supported for the most part is for the population 65 and older.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, and it's so similar to that other one, but, the population that you want included in this indicator is 18 and higher. So, where is the evidence to support those people who are 18 to 65? And I know we have a pharmacist on our work group, too, so I know we'll get to hear from her, but that was really the limitation, is being able to have the supporting evidence that would support this for the entire adult population.
Okay, I'll go back and look at our measure history, some of the minutes from the past meetings, and I'll see what I can have for you ready for the when we meet in a couple weeks.
You know, and just to add to that, I mean, what would be important to know is if you did include the 18, you know, is it because it's just easier to capture the whole population in your data collection? I mean, it doesn't add an additional burden to collect the data from that population, because certainly, even though the literature is focused on the over 65 and older, you know, if you're younger and you're on these medications, and you don't get monitored, you're still at risk. It's just there's just not a lot of data about those risks and specifically what they are. So just an added comment. Okay, the next section is a performance gap. I think I mentioned that. You know, there are seven studies. Let's see. Performance gap. Now the next quantity, quality, and consistency of the body of evidence. For the quantity, I gave it a moderate. I think there's seven studies cited, but I think, as was pointed out also by another work group member, that they're not all relevant to the drugs that are listed in the measure. For example, one of them was actually focused on drug monitoring for a patient on a thyroid replacement, RABEL 2006. And most of them are over 65 focused. And Sloan 2006 just looks at the patterns of use, but really not adverse drug reactions or monitoring. So in terms of quality, I gave it a moderate as well. Most of the studies, again, look at the frequency of the prescriptions in the elderly and their contributions to ER visits, but not to the one specific in the measure at hand. The other question that I had in terms of the quality of the data, and wondered if there were any studies that looked at the frequency or the thing. The measure right now talks about a monitoring event at some time during the 180 days of therapy, someone who's on it for 180 days. But there's nothing about baseline testing or how frequently that testing should be or what 180 days. I mean, should it be in the first a couple of weeks that they're placed on it, or is any time okay? At like, you know, close to the end of the 6 month period that they're on it. Wondered if there was any data about that from the, because this is a measure that's been out there, if you've ever looked at that. I mean, that would really kind of be helpful, because maybe some of these people need to have the measure looked at a specific timing during the first 6 months that they're on it.
Jeremy or Dawn, do you have any comment about that on the timing of testing, whether there's a baseline test or the frequency of testing?
Can you hear us?
Can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. We can't answer that at this time, but we can definitely get back to you before the steering committee meeting.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And the same comments for the consistency. I also gave it a moderate because there really aren't any guidelines for monitoring frequency, but the FDA, they point out that the FDA has labeling, but it doesn't really recommend labeling for all, doesn't recommend monitoring for all these drugs. And if it does, it's not always specific. For example, Ramipril, which is an ACE inhibitor, suggests monitoring renal function in the first few weeks and monitoring potassium often, or frequently, I think is the word they use. So, you know, maybe there is some rationale for the timing of the monitoring, maybe, and not just a generic statement of once in 180 days. But I think that because there's the study suggests that these medications are used frequently and there are related hospitalizations and ER visits, there has been a benefit of monitoring over the course of therapy, you know, as a conservative standard of care. Reliability, I gave it a high. Again, I mentioned earlier that we need clarifications over the statins where tricyclic antidepressants need to be included. But their reliability scores are pretty high. There are specific CPT codes to identify the numerator and the denominator. And I think the field test